So what's on your mind? Yes.
There are some major milos to go into the yeshiva in Queens, but there are some major chisronos.
No. But,
So I was wondering, should a person look into different options in trying to find a yeshiva that's more suitable for him, or should he? Or, like, for example, should he try to find a yeshiva where he would potentially get a good kesher with the Rebbe? Or try to figure out what would be best for him?
You're taking away my breakfast speech. You know, at the beginning of each year, we have a breakfast. Okay. Beginning of each year, we have a breakfast with the new incoming Talmidim in Queens. I always give the same speech. See, Han Hal is getting sick and tired of it, but, you know, I do it every year. But there is, again, when it comes to every individual's own circumstance of what's best for him to stay longer in a branch, leave earlier, to go someplace else, I'm not really going to even address it because somebody has to know you and what you're all about, and you're probably much better off getting advice from your rabbeim here. But just in terms of generically, an overall view, you know, there's a, I think Rabbi Lubam will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Rabbi Meir Chodesh once commented on the Maimer Chazal that says, Harbe lamadti mirabosai, v'yoser mechaverai, v'talmida yoser mikulam. I learned a lot from my rabbeim and more from my friends, and I'll do yoser mikulam. So why are you wasting all this time with your rabbeim and your friends? Why don't you just start right off with your talmidim? So the pshat is, there's a sequence. After your mekayim harbe lamadtim rabosai, then you could get yosem mechavero. After your mekayim yosem mechavero, then you could be talmid yosem kulam. There's a progression in a person's growth. And when a person is younger and beginning, you need, you know, to much more harbe lamadtim rabosai. And you can't stand on your own feet. In high school, for example, you know, things are much more regimented, and you have your, you know, you go to shir, you have your achan, the Rebbe's on top of you. Even if, you know, some people aren't learning in high school, maybe the haskol is in base medrash, or some people the haskol is later than that, but I'm assuming, even if you started, it's much more, much less independent and much more directed by the Rebbe. When you get to base medrash, it's much more independent. You know, you have three siddurim a day, and Bekiya Seder, you're basically on your own, you can ask questions and so on, but it's independent. Even in the morning, you spend more of the morning on your own independent learning than you do in shir. But you're following the shir of the Rebbe. I don't think it was necessarily planned this way. I think it was just, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu running the world. But the way our network kind of developed was that people go to the branches for the early years of Beis Medrash. Branches tend to be smaller. They are smaller than Queens. And therefore, even though there's a lot of independence and you have to stand up on your own two feet, there's also a lot of hand-holding and a lot of help. And you know, the Hanhola-Talmud ratio is quite strong. And people will notice if you're going off, they'll come over to you. And people sort of, you know, the Hanhola sort of a little bit takes the proactive, you know, takes the initiative. And they come and try to help you. When you come to Queens, it's a bigger place. And it doesn't really work like that. You know, you here and there, you know, if you severe cases, whatever. But if a person sort of sits back and just goes with the flow, probably, you know, as long as he basically shows up, probably nobody's going to really notice. And you won't necessarily get the most out of your experience. So you have to be able to stand up on your own and you can go and seek out the Rebbe. Join one of the Vadim, you know, work yourself, ask questions. If you're the type of guy that finds it hard to speak up, you're doing shir or a session, so you find other avenues, you know, venues. So you got to take initiative to yourself. I personally think overall it's a healthy thing. You have to work at it. You can develop a kesher with rabbeim or different members of the Hanhala, but it takes more effort. But it should take more effort. You're growing up. You're getting older. You have to stand on your own. One day you're going to leave the yeshiva and you're going to be more on your own. You should always have a rebbe your entire life. But that's the part of the growth. I think the system works pretty well. But is everybody ready for that step at exactly the same time, exactly the same place? Probably not. Where everyone belongs, I don't know. You know, that's something that's kedai if you have questions and you have sakas on yourselves, it's kedai to consult with your rabbi. But I think, you know, I think it's a good thing. If you're not ready for it, if it's not for you, maybe in the Hanami, maybe you should look for someplace else. But that's an individual decision.
Is what you're saying is as a lechatchila or
b'diavad? I think be'etzem it's a lechatchila. I'm not saying it was planned that way. I think it just happened. You know, originally Queens didn't have branches. The yeshiva was smaller or whatever. We had first year, second year shirim in Queens. When the branches started, little by little, that's what started to happen. And then when the yeshiva allowed branch black credit, that really like took it to the next level. And he did that, I think, mostly to be mechazik the branches, not so much the cheshbon. But that's what sort of developed. But I always say some of the best decisions, no, practically all of the best decisions I ever made in my life, I never made. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu made them, and we were forced into it. This is a good case in point, Miami. You know, I guess I sort of made a decision to go to Miami, but the idea was we were going to start a high school based Medrash. We had nothing to do with Torah Semes. Torah Semes was an independent school. And Torah Semes came to us, and they wanted us to take over. They had certain, I'm not going to bore you with the whole story. Maybe I will bore you with the whole story. But basically, Torah Semes was a conglomerate of three groups. There was the group that I would call, eventually became the Chofetz Chaim group. They weren't really that at the beginning, but they wanted a certain approach. There was a group that liked Rabbi Zweig, and there was a group that was a more YU-oriented group. And the principal of Torah Semes announced like in January or February that he was leaving for a different position. And the three groups cannot agree on who the next principal should be. So any candidate that one group brought up, the other two groups opposed, and one candidate after another was rejected. And it's February, and it's March, and it's April, and they still don't have a principal. So then to compound matters, you know, only Baal Batim could do this, a board, you know, they made this announcement, we're not running 8th grade, not enough 8th graders. So we're not running 8th grade. So Beis Yaakov said they'll take the 8th grade girls. And Toras Chaim and Rabbi Zweig's yeshiva said, okay, we'll take 8th grade boys, we had to compete for them. But then, a few days later, they announced we're not running a 7th grade. So, same story, okay, we'll take the 7th grade, Beis Yaakov takes the 7th grade girls. Then they announced we're not running the 6th grade girls. Which is why Beis Yaakov begins with 6th grade, in case you're wondering. How did that happen? Why is Beis Yaakov agreeing with 6th grade? That's how it happened. They're not running 6th grade girls, okay, Beis Yaakov, they still were going to run the 6th grade boys. So now everyone's panicking. There's no principal. Every day another class is closing down. People start jumping ship, switching to Hebrew Academy, to Hillel. The place is falling apart. It's May and they still don't have a principal. So they came to Rabbi Chait, who was had Toras Chaim, who at that time had the grand total of 2 students. And they were supposed to have 4, but 2 of them chickened out before school started. So they came to ask him to be the principal of Torah Semes. I was already supposed to be coming. He calls me up. You got to find the principal for Torah Semes. Anyways, we mentioned the Shiva. The Shiva said, great! We'll take over Torah Semes. You'll not be the principal. We'll make a deal with them. You know, we'll be part, you know, the Shiva's deal. So the last thing we needed, we didn't know the first thing about running elementary school. We didn't know the first thing about running a high school either. But how hard it could be with 2 kids, you know? So the she was telling us, you'll have a feeder school, you should do it. We were afraid. So I got on the phone and I called everybody I could think of who could possibly be a principal, including, by the way, Rabbi Bauman, but he wasn't ready to leave LA at the time. I called a guy who I didn't really know, except I heard him speak in the Torah Masorah convention, and I thought he was a pretty good guy, and he was married to a friend of my sister's. So I called my sister and asked him, do you know this guy? He says, yeah. Is he a good guy? She says, seems like it. Okay. He's qualified. So I called him, but he wasn't interested. That was really embarrassing because he was in Winnipeg at the time. We were so bad that he wouldn't leave Winnipeg to come to us. So we're going back and forth. We still didn't want to do it. Even though the Rishim was telling us we should do it, we should do it, we should do it. We didn't want to do it. It's towards the end of May. And then they finally came up with an argument that persuaded us to do it. They said to us, listen, we'd like you to take over the school, but if you're not going to do it, somebody's got to do it. We'll offer it to Rabbi Zweig. And suddenly we saw the wisdom of taking it over. So we were forced into it, literally forced into it. So Rabbi Chait became the interim principal of because it's too late to get a principal, of Torah Semes. And that's how we got. They almost threw us out after a year, but we worked it out. But the fact of the matter is that the so we didn't want to do it, but it was the smartest thing we ever. And it wasn't smart; it was the best. It wasn't smart because it wasn't intelligence. It was hechrach, because Baruch Hu wanted us to do it. So a lot of it happens through the hashkacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's how the system developed. But lemaisa, I really think it is by and large a good thing. When the people need more hand holding, so to speak, more attention. When you're just starting out in your careers, you're finding your way into the Beis Medrash, you don't exactly know what you're doing, and you're in an environment that's geared towards that and helps you grow and reach to the next level. After a few years, you get stronger and you can stand on your own feet. Then you're in an environment that kind of demands from you that you do stand on your own feet. But if a person, because of his personality or whatever reasons, I don't know. It's an etzah to be sure. I do think if you are going to end up coming to Queens, if you wait too long, it becomes very difficult, because then you're already holding by shiduchim. It's hard to break in. It's hard to feel part of the place. But these are all cheshbonos that people have to make.
What's the etzah for picking up your Rebbe's hadracha if it's not or being able, like Rebbe is saying with the tzchilos? How do you pick up your Rebbe's hadracha and the halachim?
By listening to what they say, working on the shmuzin, on the shurim, going to vadim, asking questions, listening when other people ask questions. You just have to be more proactive, there are plenty of opportunities. And, part of the beauty is that, people always, they're different on holy members, not everyone's exactly the same, and the same thing is true, I'm sure, here, and the same thing is true between branch to branch or branch to queens. But I think everybody has the same general mahalach. And Mimele, whether certain nuances might be a little different, lo nora, so you get those nuances too. But the main thing is to be active. You seek it out and be active, and I think it works for most.
If a person's going to have to settle for lower member than Rashi Shiva, so isn't more kedai to stick with your Rashi
Shiva brand? I don't think so. I first of all, I don't think it's one or the other. I think you might have an Anhala member that you could spend more time with, perhaps hak more easily, but you're working on the shurim and the shmuzim of the Rosh Hashivas, and maybe when you have certain opportunities to speak to them, we do try to be accessible. You may have to wait a few days to get an appointment. You don't necessarily get same day service. But if a person is persistent, you do get in, and there are vadim, there are groups, there are all kinds of things. I think you could get the best of both worlds, But in terms of staying, let's say you're to stay in Miami. I don't know what Rabbi Luban thinks, but I do know it basically. But I think it's not really set up for that. You will end up sort of outgrowing your peers. In Queens, you have the koach. It's the Yosar Mechavero. You have the Pilpul Chaverim. You have the Olam. You have the Sechaburis. There's a Kolal. There are many things going that are going. You have older Chaver. We try to. It started a few years ago. I think it's a very good system. Like during the Pilpul Shiurim, we try to have pairing up older guys with the younger guys for for learning. So it helps facilitate certain interaction. Some of it is mimela, some of it is requires effort. But there's a lot going on. There's a lot you can gain from. But you need to chase it down. If you wait for it to come to you, you get less out of the experience. I think that's okay. Something else.
Is it problematic that guys are getting married 2.5 years after?
I don't know, and half of that time they're branching. So I don't know. It depends on the guy. Everything. It's hard to give a general answer. A lot of guys do get into it, but also it's not like everything stops when you get married. It's just that it becomes a little. You have more distraction. I know, like people sometimes come with the shilas that they want. They're trying to decide when to start going out, and sometimes they have this cheshbon. They're leaving Blatcher and they want to start the Beis Medrash. So they want to be able to start in the Beis Medrash without distractions, dating and so on. They should wait an extra 2 months or some kind of cheshbon like that. So I'm not, if people feel that way, that's okay with me, but I'm not such a big fan of this. Ki'ilu, they're saying, these are going to be my 2 months to get in, and then I stop learning. It says, if you don't learn how to juggle, all your distractions with your learning, you're done. Because the rest of life is like that. You think dating is the issue, then what about when you're married, and what about when you have kids, and what about when you have a job? So one of the very important skills in life that you must have is be able to juggle more than one thing. And if you can't do that, you're in a lot of trouble. The 2 months that you had without distractions is not going to save you. It's nice to have it, but it's not going to save you. Yeah, but okay, but I'll get started in the Beis Medrash. I'll break in. Okay, maybe that's for, but you really better learn how to deal with life's distractions. But that's the next stage. Yeah. After, you know what the problem is? Whenever a person goes to the next stage of life, they realize that the last stage was much easier. But they only realize that in retrospect. While you're in that stage, it seems so difficult. You know, last was easier. You know, I was in high school, so much easier. I was basically better. The first year was okay. The second year was, before I was dating, everything was fine. And, now that I'm dating, so they get married. Well, I was dating, it really wasn't so bad. Now I have a kid. Getting married wasn't so bad. You get two kids. Yeah. It's always in retrospect. You never catch up with the system. It happens to have some value. I wouldn't say it doesn't have any value, but you have to understand a little bit of the yisod of human nature is that all inspiration is very fleeting. You know, Rosh Yeshiva has a shmuz, I think it's a Yalkut Shimoni, that says that the satan, you know, after the Akedah, so the aisle was running to Avram Avinu, and the satan got stuck in the branches so that Avram should have to go get it. So Shiva says, here's Avram Avinu on the highest level, just past the Nisayon of the Akedah. He's Dovak Pashem. So you think that if the aisle doesn't run right up to him, so Avram's not going to bring the carbon? Like, what's the Sutton thinking? Why is he wasting his energy? He said, the Pashem, of course Avram's going to bring the carbon. But it takes a few extra seconds. He's going to have to go over, pull the aisle out of the branches, bring him over, and his intense inspiration may get less. And that's Kedai for the Sutton. Stomach didn't work. Avraham Avinu was able to maintain it. But it's possible, you know, that you would lose it in those few seconds under such conditions. So any inspiration is very fleeting.
That's
the
inspiration, it's an emotion.
So how does emotions work? So there's a emotions, it makes a roshem in your life. It isn't that it changes you, it transforms you. It makes, every muster makes a roshem, even if it's not emotional. It's just a weaker roshem. Emotion intensifies the roshem. The way that works optimally is that the emotion comes from the content. And as your misbonen v'dover mitzayir b'sichlo ad sheyisayv libo, the lashon is that you think about something and the thought inspires emotion. So that means what comes into your heart is the content, is the musar, it's what you're saying. So that means, so if you're thinking about, you know, kirav amar ozvas Hashem, what do you gain by leaving Hashem? And you're mitzayin and you say, oh, what a person does this and he does that and look what happens and is it worth it? And you're thinking about these things, so that concept becomes ingrained in your heart a little bit more than if you would have thought about it without emotion. When the emotion comes from the outside, you aren't necessarily really focusing on the content. It's the presentation, it's the tone of voice. The Dubna Magid said, I could say a hespit on a mouse and have everybody crying. Because it's the way you say it and how you say it and so on. So you are emotional, but are you focused on the thought? It's something very general. Torah is beautiful. I guess that helps to a certain degree. So externally induced emotions are far less effective than an emotion that wells up from the inside. So that's what we're saying. So I don't think we're sort of saying there's something bad about these speeches. It's just that, you know, they have much more limited effect, a short-term effect. And, you know, and you could get emotional about the wrong things too. You're not really thinking about it. So a person can give this very dramatic emotional speech and convince you of who knows what, some kind of a swara, that when you're thinking about something, you're going to be straighter. So if it's a straight speech, it's a good speaker who's das Torah and he's grounded and everything else, and what he's saying is proper, it does have some value, but much less value than really learning to be spyless and coming from the inside out. But it's not like we're allergic to it. You know, it's just has a... But a very good eitzah, by the way, is when a person is inspired, whether it's an emotional speech or an event or a levaya or whatever it might be, And something that inspires you to something is to try to translate that inspiration into action, into doing something. And that the inspiration may not last, but what you do, you know, could last. Something that you could make a Kabbalah, something, but something easy, something you know you'll be able to fulfill. But the idea would be that translate that inspiration into action, and or into learning, into Torah, into action, that will last much longer than the inspiration itself. The Shiva has also Shmuz, it says, by Maisa Sheni, says, L'man tilmad yiras Hashem alikecha. Right? You bring the Maisa Sheni is an interesting halacha. You're supposed to bring the Maisa to Yerushalayim and eat it there, or redeem it and spend the money on food there. What does that in essence do? It makes you spend time in Yerushalayim. How much food could you eat in one day? So you have to use up all your Maisa. You could give it away, but people don't like to give away all their money, so they're going to stay in Yerushalayim. So what's the point of staying in Yerushalayim? You learn to fear Hashem. How are you going to learn to fear Hashem? So the Medrash says, because the Sanhedrin is in Yerushalayim and you learn Torah from them. So Rosh Yeshiva said, one second, it's true the Sanhedrin is in Yerushalayim, but it doesn't mean they don't have Talmid Chachamim outside Yerushalayim. You have every city had a Sanhedrin Ketana, and you had Batei Dinim, and you have Talmid Chachamim everywhere. The greatest Talmid Chachamim are in Yerushalayim, but you have pretty good Talmid Chachamim elsewhere too. So all you're talking about is upgrading, you know, from a certain level of learning to a higher level of learning. Midakisa, I would have thought, you know what gets a person to Yiras Hashem? He goes to the Beis Hamikdash, you feel the presence of the Shekhinah, you see the Nisim, you know, Asara Nisim Bechal Yom in the Beis Hamikdash, and there'd be a windy day and the smoke goes straight up, you know, Omdim Zekufim, and you bow down and there's plenty of space and the fire doesn't go out, and all kinds, no flies on the dead animals, you know, all kinds of Nisim. That's inspirational. Okay, you learn Torah. You can learn Torah back home too. You learn Torah a little bit better. So Shiva said, no, that's all inspirational. Everything else, you go back to your farm and you start plowing the field for the next year's crop, and before you know it, a couple of weeks pass and it's all gone. But the roshem that the learning Torah made doesn't go away so fast. So you know, we have to understand what's lasting and what's not. So an inspirational speech or emotional speech on the outside has some impact, but a much stronger impact is when it comes from your own machshava, from your own focus, your own havana, from the inside out. Yes.
Even more so than if you were just take action in an inspirational speech.
It's hard to measure, but if you take action and so on, the action depends what action you take, but the action could be very effective. So I remember that myself that. There was a tkufa, I had a nephew of mine staying in my house, in my basement. I don't remember exactly what the cheshvan was. He wasn't ready to move into the dorm. I don't remember, there was some kind of cheshvan. He stayed in my basement, and he used to come to me in the morning. Now, in order, he had this tendency of needing to be woken up in the morning. So, in order to get him up in time for, so we get to Minyan in time, I had to get up 10 minutes earlier than I normally did. So he was downstairs, I was upstairs, I had to be able to get dressed and go down and wake him up. There's still time for him to get up, you know, come to Minyan. So then he moved back and he moved into the dorm. So I had my 10 extra minutes of sleep. And at that time, that was when Rav Shach Zatzal had passed away. When I went to the Shloshim, we had a Shloshim in Queens, a big Shloshim, people spoke. I was very inspired by the speech. I was learning. I said, look at this. I said, you know what? For these last 3 months, I'm getting up 10 minutes earlier without any ill effects. So apparently I could do it, so why should I stop? So I decided to keep getting up 10 minutes early, use that 10 minutes to learn, you know, some of the things. So I still do that. So, you know, it's been years. So that's an accomplishment. So I was inspired. I went to other Levayos and Shloshim, I was inspired also. It didn't necessarily do anything. So what happened? So here there's a lasting benefit. So there is a certain, you know, so it could be, you know, it's hard to know. But again, that's not going to happen every time. You're not going to always have the opportunity to do something, you know. It's hard to know that. But if you're asking whether you should go to so-and-so's speech, you know, fine. You know, like, you could probably learn from it. You know, if it's a good person, I'm not against it. But just understand that the heavy lifting is really done from the internal hispilus, not from external. I think we could squeeze in one more question.
There's a halakha in the world that, like, to get people, like, serving Hashem better, especially, like, when, like, they're going off a shadel, you know, the halakha is, like, let them do whatever they want, and, like, you know, basically let them get everything out of the system, and you know, do call whoever they want, and then eventually, like, you know, I guess they'll guilty by themselves, or eventually they'll get it out. This time, like, they'll come back. So I was wondering if that's like I don't know if it's the issue of end justified means, or it sounds like that's a good mahala for getting people back on it, even for the yeshiva guys who are not so extreme, but like in small ways, like sometimes, you know, you're down, you're learning. So is the mahala to, like, you know, take you know, more breaks and get out of your system, or if I care, like.
Okay, that you're really set, you're asking two different things. There's a very big difference between a person taking extra breaks or a person like doing kamina dover us or all kinds of things like that. So I should divide this into two different questions. I really would not lump the two together at all. A person who's is at what we call today at risk, going off to derech and so on. I don't necessarily claim direct expertise how to deal with them. But in a general sense, if you think about it from the perspective of the person who's trying to work with them, why should you tell them not to do something wrong or to do something right? What's your perspective? Why are you doing that? It's not you, it's him. The answer is, it's tochacha. In Hilchos tochacha, k'shem shemitzvah lomar davar shenishma, kein mitzvah shelo lomar davar she'eino nishma. Just as it's a mitzvah to say something which will be listened to, it's a mitzvah not to say something which won't be listened to. So it requires a certain amount of judgment and expertise. If a person is holding a certain state in life where he's not going to listen to you, then there's no mitzvah to tell them things that they're not going to listen to. I don't think, though, the derech is to just abandon them, let them do whatever they want. I think there are certain messages you could say, and certain messages that get through without giving the guy direct instruction or direct tochacha, and keep him connected so that, you know, a person can rejoin and so on. But it's a little it's a complicated parasha. But there certainly are situations where the proper das Torah would be not to tell him that he's doing something. He probably knows it. You know, and you're not really telling him anything he doesn't know. He's not ready to listen. So you got to work with him. But at the same time, you're never allowed to give him the impression that it's perfectly okay to do something wrong, that you're not allowed to do. So you gotta get, it's a balance. You gotta get a message you don't approve, but you still love him. You're still gonna work with him and talk to him. And, you know, eventually, hopefully, you get him back. When you're talking to a person who's basically, you know, in the mainstream, but you know, everyone has their weak days, their stronger days, or maybe in general, a person has difficulties. There are certainly etzus and tachbulas to take it easier or to go in steps. You know, and the general rule of life is that people don't jump piskira achas in one jump from the bottom to the top. People go bahadraga, step by step. And people slide, and then they pick themselves up. And it's not a direct line. People don't... You want to take two steps forward and one step back. Not one step forward and two steps back. But that's what happens in life. And then the Yetzirah comes in, one of the greatest Eitzes HaYetzer, very smart fellow, the Yetzirah. They tell the story of Rav Huttner, who was once sitting in the Beis Medrash, learning by himself. And somebody came over to him and said, "No, you're not supposed to learn by yourself. You're supposed to learn with Chavrusa." He said, "I have a Chavrusa." He says, "Who's your Chavrusa?" "The Yetzirah." I say, "Yetzirah, that's a Chavrusa?" He says, "It's the best Chavrusa. First of all, he's a genius. And second of all, he's always there. Never misses a minute." So the Yetzirah is always there. You know, one of the Eitzes HaYetzer is to pick on your inconsistencies. He'll say to you, "Oh, yeah, you want to learn? Gevaldik, great idea. Be a masmid. Be a tzaddik. Be a talmid chacham. You're going to steig. They're going to write art scroll books about you." It is. And you get in there and you're plugging away and, you know, and this, and all of a sudden you fizzle out because you really can't do it. And then Yetzer comes in, "You loser. You are a failure. Look at this. You're supposed to learn. You couldn't even do it for 2 days, one day, whatever it is, and you're goofing off, so you're worthless." He says, and the truth of the matter is, you know, yesh kon olam sha'achas, Chazal tells us, sometimes a person in one moment can be acquired the whole world. Most, if not all, those cases, they die in the process. Usually, the way you're kon olam is one step, a little bit. So I always tell people are always concerned, how do I grow? What's the greatest growth vehicle and so on? The most important thing in growth is to always get a little bit better. Not to turn over the world. So if a person has difficulties, it is okay. You know, again, it's probably a good idea to get eights on the specifics, but it's okay. You take a break, you do a little easy. But you know what? If today or that's this week you're taking X number of breaks, maybe next week you could cut it down a little, make the break a little shorter, and go gradually, step by step, and build yourself up. You don't have to be perfect all at once. As Chazal say, "V'chim mishum she'ochel shum yachs ve'recha nodev, yachs ve'yochel shum ve'herecha nodev." Person ate garlic and his breath smells. Therefore, he should eat more garlic and make his breath smell worse. That's what the Yetzer Hara does. You're not perfect. Good, I'm not perfect. Therefore, I should be worse. So I'm not perfect. Neither are you. Or the Yetzer Hara maybe is, but neither is anybody else. So I'm not perfect, but I could be better. So be a little bit better. If a person has that attitude, that I just have to be a little bit better, you'll get very far. Before you know it, I don't know if you'll ever be perfect, but you'll be quite a bit better. And then you'll look at it, but it doesn't matter. You'll get better, but you'll have nishonos at that level too. And again, the Yetzer Hara will come with the same trick. Right? And you could reach a level where maybe 3 years ago you were only dreaming of it, and now you're there, and the Yetzer Hara will still tell you you're a failure because you didn't do this right, you didn't do that right, and you didn't this. So you have to avoid that nishonos. Little by little, step by step, it works. That's how people get where they go. Okay, Rabbi Osai? It's been a pleasure. Yeah.